So, as the previous shirim, we have been focusing on, as a introduction, as it were, to the question of different kinyanim, specifically in the fourth parak, which I'm hoping to get back to. But we started with the idea of the notion of Misha Para, the question of the penalties, the moral penalties, perhaps the legal penalties that exist when a person decides to back out of an agreement, even though there has not yet been a formal kinyan that binds that person to the agreement. And we talked about two different levels of that. One is when a person makes some kind of action which might even be have value on a legal sense, but that are not binding, the kinyan kesef and the money from kinyan ma'ot, when it comes to metaphilim, when it comes to commodities that are not real estate. And another level of simply just a person who is not true to his word. Okay, those two different levels, and we discussed them in the previous shiurim. Before we get on to the kinyanim, so especially since this is part of the parak that we're learning a little bit further on, a key component, there's a related concept, which is I guess it's a broader concept in the sense that it applies to not just this question of where I decide to back out of a, let's say, it's the previous concept is one of being trustworthy. And trustworthy means that even when perhaps circumstances change, that was also one of the issues that we spoke about, under what circumstances can you back out of an agreement, but that even if circumstances change, right, so I'm going to be faithful to my word, right? The the elephant type of concept. I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. But there is a much broader element, which is just simply a question of person's character, which comes up in a whole slew of different aspects of a person's life, impacting on halakha, and also you have situations where the halakha itself is limits the responsibilities that we have, and yet we might feel on a moral level, perhaps we have a greater obligation, or if not obligation, certainly a responsibility. So, what does the halakha do with that? And this is very broadly falls into this category called lifnim mishurat hadin. Okay. I guess you can liberally translate as being beyond the letter of the law, or literally within the or outside, literally within, but the shurat hadin, the row, the line of the law, and you go beyond that line. So, okay, let's try to see some of the Gemara, which is discussed. I did not give you all of the sugyot where the term appears, and maybe if there's time, I'll mention another one of them, which is of a more philosophical element than and even agadic level than the others. Right, I want to focus on the ones that starting in our perek, because those are perhaps the key, and then some of the others that I gave you on the sheet, and then discussions amongst the Rishonim and the Achronim, as well as perhaps some philosophical musing on the theme. So the Gemara says the following, right? Gemara on Chaf Dal Amibet, we'll just go basically in the order that I gave you the Makorot, where the the Gemara says the following. Rav Yehuda have shakil va'azil batre demar Shmuel b'shuka de Beit Eisa. So Rav Yehuda, who is a student of Shmuel, So he was walking behind his master in the shuk. And he asked him the following question. Matzakan arnike mahu. If a person were to find a wallet here, what would be the halacha? Amar lehare elu shelo. So it's yours. In other words, you find a wallet in a crowded marketplace, and we'll add the fact that it's a marketplace which was primarily non-Jewish, and we'll reach the sugyot about what happens. Does it matter if you're living in a primarily Jewish area or primarily non-Jewish area? But here, Shmuel said, under these circumstances, there's Yeush, and one can keep the wallet. Amrlei, by Israel, what happens in the following case? V'natan basiman mahu. So if a Jew comes and gives a verifiable siman for the wallet, what would be the halacha then? In other words, if it's based on Yeush, fine, but if now I have a person here who I can reasonably assume is the owner of the wallet, I find the wallet even without him coming forward. I find it his driver's license in the wallet. I know exactly whose it is, but it's in an area where the person presumably had Yeush. What would the halacha be then? Amalei chayev lahachzir. So then you have to give it back. So Rav Yehuda's response to Shmuel was tarte. So are these two answers? How can you say hare elu shelo and then I have to return it? There's a siman that's contradictory. Amalei lifnim mishurat hadin. No, I understand. When I told you, he said chayav. Remember that you have to return it. But he said you have to return it because of lifnim mishurat hadin. A similar case that happened to, the Gemara says, happened to Shmuel's father. Whether Shmuel himself quoted the case isn't totally clear, but it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Eshka chana chamre b'midbara v'adrina l'mayre l'marayu l'vata treseh yarche shata l'fnim mishuratate. So that Shmuel's father found some animals, some donkeys that were that were wandering in the desert, and he returned them to the owner 12 months later. There's a question exactly what was the lifnim mishurat hadin there. Was that he had to return them in the first place? That's what Rashi seems to say. Or that the Balei Tosfot and other Rishonim talk about that he actually took care of these animals in the interim, where the halakha is that when you have animals, you find animals, and while there's a loss that's involved in terms of taking care of them. You have to buy them feed, you have to make sure that they are tended to, etc. So you don't have to go that far in terms of your chiyuv for hashavat l'beida. Even if they're simanim, what you can do is simply mark down what the simanim are, sell the animals, hold the money, and then when you find the owner, then return the value of the animals to them. But Shmuel went beyond the letter of the law, and he actually held on to the animals themselves. Okay? So that's the lifnim mishurat hadin. But regardless of what the lifnim mishurat hadin was, Avua de Shmuel did that. And the Gemara continues with a similar story, which you can ask, why is it here? Especially since it seems to be contradictory. Rava have shakil v'azal batre de Rav Nachman b'shuka de Gildoy. So now Rava was walking with Rav Nachman. So we have basically gone ahead. We are one generation later. Rav Nachman is a contemporary of Yehuda. And Rava is a young student of Rav Nachman. And he's going with Rav Nachman in a shuk, similar circumstance. V'amrlei b'shuka d'rabbanan, amrlei matza kan arnekei mahu. Amrlei, harei el shalo, by Yisrael v'natan basiman mahu, amrlei, harei el shalo. The opposite of what Shmuel had said. V'halo omeid v'tzaveach. So he says, but he's standing there, he's screaming, this is my wallet, take a look, there are all my pictures, there's my the driver's license, those are my credit cards, etc., etc., etc. So his answer is, Nasa ketzavach al beito shenafal v'al svinato shetava bayam. So it's the equivalent of him, just saying, call it zutel shelyam, right? If you will, he lost something. It's in a place where he has no reasonable expectation of getting it. He had yeush and, you know, finders keepers, right? Losers, whatever. Right? That's basically it. So here you have a story. It's the same story. You can understand the logic of both positions. But the Gemara doesn't try to correlate these two. We try to say, well, how do you try to work them out? It just brings the two positions. Rav Nachman, if you will, is saying you don't have to return it. Shmuel saying that you not only should return it, he doesn't say that's like a mitat kasidut or something along those lines. He says, chayav, you should return it. Right? So, can we try to somehow square that circle? Okay, so that's source number one. Source number two, okay, the Gemara on Daf Lamed. It's in a larger discussion, just to give you a sense. I didn't read, tell you to take a look at the whole discussion. A question of whether there's a story about the Tana, Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yosef, and in terms of his helping someone load and unload his donkey, and the person took advantage of Rabbi Yosef Rishima. The Gemara asks, why was he doing this action in the first place? Because there's a halakha that if it is beneath one's dignity to be engaged in this mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda, or the mitzvah of dealing with a donkey, we don't expect you to necessarily forfeit your dignity in order to help the person under these circumstances. In other words, you look at the one person's loss, you look at the, if you will, the finder's loss as well, right? If he has to do something which is clearly humiliating, right? So he has what to lose as well. So the halacha, without getting into one, we'll hopefully reach the sugya later on, we'll talk about exactly what the limitations are, what the expectations are. But be that as it may, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosef, had a legitimate halachic tour from participating. So why did he not take advantage of that? Right? So that's where we pick it up. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosef zakein be'ino lefik fodo. He was a person who was an elder, and he, because of his status, he did not have to participate in this. So the Gemara's answer is Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosef lifnim mishurat hadin hu da'avad. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosef did this beyond the letter of the law. The Tani Rabbi Yosef, because as Rabbi Yosef taught, haldata lahem ze beit chayehem et haderech zo gmilut chasadim. Sher yelchu ba ze bikur cholim. Okay, ba ze kvura. Ve tamase ze hadin. Asher yasu Okay, so with that context of the pasuk, right? The pasuk is being broken down. Hodata lahem et haderech asher yelchu ba ve'et hamaaseh asher yasun. That's the pasuk, and each element is a different element of chesed and of ultimately that you should do asher lifnei mishurat hadin. By the way, did you notice, and if you didn't notice, I'll point it out, right? What was the source that was brought back on Chavdal and Mubet for the lifnei mishurat hadin? You look it up. What was the source? There wasn't one. Right? The Gemara said lifnei mishurat hadin. Here, the Gemara feels that it's important to bring a source, and the source that's being brought is a pasuk where? In
the Torah.
In the Torah. Okay, where? Shmot. Perek Yudchet. What's the context? Anyone look up the parak?
It
is Yitro.
Before Har Sinai.
So what's the context? Good.
Before we got the...
The context of the story. I don't care the context, let's say, whether it's in Vayikra or Shmot or in Bereishit. I'm just saying, what is the context of the storyline or the, you know, the perek that I can understand? Because it's also important, you have to remember, when you're looking at drashot, that doesn't, you're not always going to find the connection, but more than 9 times out of 10, if you are paying careful attention, if you ask me, when you look at a drasha, if you have a function of an equation, those people who aren't math people like myself, right? So you don't have to listen. But I think that, as I said, I'm not a particularly big math person, but since I thought of it, I guess it works. Anyway, it's a function. If you have a function of equation, what is one of the, and you define the range of that equation, of that function, what is it bound by? The range of the original equation. The range of a function can't be outside of the range of the original equation. And similarly, if you will, it's drashot are functions of pshat, functions of psukim. So when you look at the drash, you should also look at the range of the original equation. You should be looking at the range of the pshat, of where it's coming from, to understand the context. Not that the chachamim are just picking psukim out of the air and saying, I'm going to break it out. It helps me to understand the context, because that will help me the drash. Yes, Jeff?
The context of Yifet is... when you're just telling Moshe you're going to wear yourself out.
Right.
And then Moshe's like, okay, and Yitro tells him you should tell the people to go essentially above the level of the law.
Okay, in other words, who's speaking? Is it Yitro or is it...
just telling Moshe.
Right? In other words, Yitro is telling Moshe on a pshat level what?
Fix the court system.
Right? Fix the court system. Right? That how... what kind of judges should be... What should the judges be teaching the people? Right. So within that context, perhaps, of throwing in the perhaps, the range of that original pasuk, as it were, is basically saying, okay, within the context of the legal system, what is the legal system? Now, if I'm looking at that from that perspective, so then this drasha is especially powerful, because it's saying, what are all of the elements here, or most of them anyway? Before you reach Lifnim Meshurat HaDin, what do you have? Bikur Cholim, Gemilut Chasadim, right? Kvura. In other words, different elements of Chesed. Right? That's also within the rubric of the courts. That's basically what Rav Yosef is saying. And part of the rubric of the court is the Din and the Lifnim Meshurat. Right, din is asher yasu is the din, but excuse me, the ma'aseh is the din, but asher yasu, the way you do it, is the lifnim meshurat hadin. You have to be aware of the din. Question that I'm going to just throw in the air for the moment. I'm not going to answer it yet. Hopefully, we will answer it before lunch. But what's the difference? Is there a difference between lifnim meshurat hadin and gemilut chasadim? In other words, if I had, let's take the case that we've those cases that we've already seen. Right? I find the wallet. And I find the wallet, I'll make it even better. You know, it's the type of thing that will get me onto, you know, it'll go viral for 5 seconds. Okay? I find some wallet from, you know, 1974. Right? And it's been clear it hasn't been touched since then. And I track down, I go really crazy with this, right? I do a little research, I find the person, oh, that person used to live here in Yerushalayim, but then they moved to Tel Aviv, and I do da-da-da-da, and I track down, right, his widow, right, who's now living in, you know, some, in poverty somewhere, right, and I give her the wallet, and it has, you know, contains this rare bill, which is worth thousands, millions, and now she's able, you know, okay, great, really great story. So what would I, you know, what would you call that? Chesed, right? Right? You call it, wow, what an act of chesed, right? Here it's being called, wow, what an act of lifnim mishurat hadin. So is lifnim mishurat hadin just another expression of chesed? The same way that you talk about, I don't know, different examples here. Visiting the sick. Burying the dead. Acts of chesed. Right? They're not the same act. You wouldn't want to bury the sick person. Right? The person certainly wouldn't want to be buried. Right? But, right, that's, okay, given the context, that's an act of chesed. So given the context, returning the wallet is an act of chesed. It's just called lifnim mishurat hadin. Or is it a different category altogether? It's perhaps related in the same family, but it's not the same idea. Okay? So just keep that in mind. And then the Gemara says, goes one step further, than an important line. After going through the discussion of the of chesed, I didn't ask you to look at this one. This is just a continuation. But if your Gemara is open on Lamed Amud Bet, take a look at just three lines before the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Amud Bet. Gemara says the following: Asher Ya'asun Zo Lifnim Mishurat Hadin. Damer b'yochanan lo charva Yerushalayim, ella al shedanu ba din Torah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says that Yerushalayim was only destroyed because they judged based on the halachot of the Torah. So the Gemara asks sarcastically, Ela dine de bagista the dino? What do you mean that the Torah, that Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because they followed the Torah? What should they have followed? The Megista laws? Okay? We don't have to talk about the Megista laws because we all know all about those. Ela ema, so what is meant by Rabbi Yochanan? Shehemidu dineim al din Torah velo avdu lifnim mishurat hadin. People, doesn't mean Rabbi Yochanan saying that the Churban happened not because they chose the halacha over some other legal system, God forbid. The reason why the Churban happened was that they were so particular when it came to din, they refused to budge from the din, they refused to work lifnim mishurat hadin. So ultimately, and the Maharal has a beautiful expansion on this, which is not now the time to get into it, but basically he says, if you're always a stickler for the law, so you are a person who's lacking in chesed. A person lacking in chesed, a society that's lacking in chesed, cannot exist. And that society is ultimately going to be destroyed. And that is the sin of Yerushalayim and Bayit Sheni, was that they were insistent on the law and only the law. Okay? That is the Gemara. Yeah. And we'll get on to some of the other cases. Yeah.
But then why isn't within the halakha, within the law, like the concept of chesed, and then we wouldn't have the problem of having
chesed
outside the law?
Okay, so then we have to ask that. That's a really great question. In other words, there's also I'll just give you another. I didn't put it in the sheets. There's just so much that could be brought here. All right, there's a pasuk that says Lo tedar dal berivo. What does that mean? Anyone know? Lo tedar dal berivo. It's a pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim. And also another similar pasuk is in Sefer Torah. What's the idea? That you do not, no, not from swearing, you do not give preference to the poor person in his quarrel. In other words, if you have a poor person, a wealthy person lends a poor person money. Okay? And the wealthy person, let's say, whatever the sum was, let's say, make the argument, $100,000, so that poor person can help buy a home or whatever it is. And there are terms to the agreement of when he has to be paid back. And the wealthy person gives tzedakah. And this was not one of the tzedakah that he wants to give. And he needs his money back. Now, he's not going to starve if he doesn't get his money back. Right? But the poor person might, have to sell that home that he purchased in order to pay back the debt. Does the shofet, does the court take that into account and say that you're going to win by virtue of the fact that you're poor?
No.
In other words, these concepts have to be balanced. In other words, can the court, and now this is a good segue to the case later on Pei Gimel, where perhaps it's brought in, but on a, you can understand that the system is going to have a lot of difficulties if you are always looking for the chesed side. If you always look at the chesed, so then, the unscrupulous people who happen to be poor are going to take advantage of the system in order to basically cheat wealthy people. And then at that point, the wealthy people are going to respond by not helping the poor. In other words, if I'm going to lose in court when I lent this guy $100,000 so that he could buy a house, and he went and basically, for whatever the reason, whether it was his fault or not, I don't care at the moment, right? So the next poor person who comes to me and asks for a loan, I'm going to say, I'm sorry. Right? So you have to look at it from all angles. You can say that something at this particular moment, this particular case, is an act of chesed, but it's a chesed if the person himself, the wealthy person, says he's willing to do it. Right? The wealthy person, and even if the wealthy person is willing to do it, right? If he says, listen, I'm going to give you the next time, he's not going to give that person any money, most likely. Right? So you have to look at the entire picture. It's not so simple. Right? So there is this idea of din. Reb Yochanan's not saying that you should ignore the din, but at the same time, to be a stickler, the Hamid, only on din, that's a problem. Let's take a look at this case on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, and then I don't think we have time to look at the Gemara and Baba Kama right now. We will, I think we'll have enough just with these cases. So the Gemara says the following. Rabba Bar Bar Chanon, Tavru Lehanu Shaklo Chavita de Chamra. So Rabba Bar Chanon hired some porters to move his barrels of wine, and they broke the barrels. Shaka Legalim Minhu. So he wanted to recoup his loss, so he took their cloaks, their clothing, right, their coats, whatever they were, in order to basically to pawn, and to, they had no money to pay. So he took their coats and he was going to sell them to recoup at least some of his loss. Atu Amru le Rav. So the porters went to Rav, who was Rav of Bar Chana's Rebbe, and they reported the behavior. Amar le, so Rav told Rav of Bar Chanan, give them their coats back. Amar le, Dina Hachi? Is this really the halacha? We know that they're chayiv, they were negligent, they owe me the money. This is my only way of going to gain my money. So he said, Amar le, in. Yeah, that's the halacha. Why? Leman telech bederech tovim. In order that you follow the path of the righteous. Where's that pasuk from?
Mishlei.
Didn't quote the Gemara. Remember, we had a pasuk in Shemot. He didn't quote that quote. Right? Maybe that's significant. So Yavdu Lubayu, right? If Rav tells you to do something, you're a Talmud, you're going to listen. Fine. Amrulei aniye anan v'tarchinan kuleyama v'kafinan v'leit la lan mide. So now the porters turn to Rav and said, thank you very much for our coats, but you know, we're very, very hungry. And we're poor people, and we were planning on using the wages from today to buy food. And now we don't have our wages, and we worked, and the day has been wasted, and we're going to have to miss a meal. Amarle zil hava agrayu. So he turns to Rav Chanan and says, pay him. Pay their wages that you agreed to. Amarle dina hache. He said, this is the halacha. Amarle in. Yes, this is the halacha. V'archot tzadikim tishmor. Right? You should follow the path of the righteous. That's the Gemara. Okay, so this is the, as I said, there are other sugyot, another one on the page, but I'm going to skip it right now. So the question that Tosfos already asks, right, on Chav Dalet is, why do we have so many different sources? Gemara in Chav Dalet does no source, just says it with Nimishur Tadir. Gemara in Daf Lamed brings the pasuk of in Shemot of Sher Yasun. The Gemara in on Pei Gimel talks about the idea of Leman Telech B'derech Tovim. So what is it? So Tosfot, what's Tosfot's answer? Anyone reach the Tosfot? Nobody reached the Tosfot. Okay. Fair enough. So you know what I'm going to do? We're going to continue, because I'd like you to read the Makorah. These are cool Makorah. So instead of having a discussion where I'm just sort of reading them out, I think most of you, or many of you, looked at the Gemara, right? Might themselves, fine. All right, so we have next week. So we'll, the rest of the, we'll finish the sheet. Maybe I'll add some more Makorot for next week. All right, hold on to your sheets, right? And we'll talk about it. Because as I said, I'd rather have a informed conversation about this rather than just simply giving you a quick 15-minute lecture on different points of Lifnei Mishurat HaDin. I'll take advantage then of the, you know, we'll stop the shiur. I'll just the question, leaving the question in the air. I'll leave a couple of questions for you to contemplate, right, for next time. What, number one is, right, just basically, if you take a look, I sort of framed the questions in the sections here. Okay, number one is, are all of these terms, Lifnei Mishurat HaDin, are they all the same? Right. By the way, did Rav even use the word Lifnei Mishurat HaDin? Right, those words never appear on the Gemara Daf Pei Gimel. Right, so there's no source on the Gemara in Chav Dalet. There is a term Lifnei Mishurat HaDin. There is Lifnei Mishurat HaDin and a source on the Gemara of the Pasuk and Shemot in the Gemara Daf Lamed, and there is a notion of Lifnei Mishurat HaDin without it being termed Lifnei Mishurat HaDin in the Gemara on Pei Gimel, and a pasuk brought from Mishlei. So that's just curious. Like, why? What's going on? Why can't we be consistent with at least our terms? All right. So that's one issue that I want you to think about.
does that seem to indicate, perhaps, that there are different, if you will, levels of lifnei mishurat hadin? And then what are those levels, and how do I try to sort them out? So that's number one. The other question is this idea that on the one hand you have Shmuel using the term chayav to Rav Yehuda, you have to. You have Rav, who is actually seems to force Rabbi Bar Chana to return the coats and also to give him give the porters their wages. Is this compulsory? No, is this something that we force people to do? Or is that we recommend people to do? Right? Is it a... and if it is something which is compulsory, this gets back to what Saul was asking before. Right? Saul was asking from the other direction. He was saying, well, if it's chesed, so then why don't you put chesed into the din? Right? So I'll ask the other question. If you put chesed into the din, then is it chesed anymore? Right? Then it's no longer lifnei mishurat hadin. If there's a dayan, and I'm saying, well, what if I don't? He says, I'm going to throw you into jail if you don't do this. So then, that's not lifnei mishurat hadin. That's din. That's what I'm forced to do. So how do I, balance all of these concepts? Can we force people? Is it just, is it exemplary behavior? Is it expected of all of us? Is it something that Beit Din will force? So all of these questions we have to address. Yeah, John.
Could the Gemara be suggesting that if maybe Shurat HaDin is applicable when it's for a person who needs it? Because on Kaf Dalet Amud Bet, the first marketplace that it talks about, it's like a marketplace for seeds, so you can assume that's more, I guess, a poor area. And then they say you have to give it back. Mm-hmm. And then the second marketplace uses the word like leather shop or a shuk of rabbis. Mm-hmm. You can assume that's like a rich area and you don't have to.
Yeah, rabbis, so we're just rolling in dough.
Well, the Rambam, I don't know.
Okay. So that.
The last source we just did.
Right.
It's talking about workers and taking their stuff, like they're working for someone else. And they can't buy food.
So, excellent point, and we will address it. And now that I'm, not going on, let's look at the fourth case, which I said we were going to skip, but we have a little time to look at it now. The Gemara in Baba Kama, right? It's on the sheet in front of you. And tell me how would this work with your theory. Okay? Everybody heard what Jeff said? Basically, he said that, maybe lifnei mishurat hadin is dependent on the players. For one, if the person who's coming to me, that widow case that I gave you, of course you have to give it back to her. But Bill Gates' wallet, right? And he says, but if I don't get it back, I will, I might not be able to overcome Jeff Bezos and become the wealthiest person in the world. I'll have to stick to being number two, right? So then maybe I don't have to give it back to him, right? Does it depend on the people who are there, right? But I throw in also, what about the person who is founded? Will that make a difference? If, let's say, a poor person finds something, right? I find the wallet, okay. Now a poor person finds the wallet. And for that person, it's going to make all the difference in the world to... Ms. Ebner, are you looking for this?
Bobby, yes.
Okay, so for that person, it'll make all the difference in the world to, if he, let's say there's a few hundred shekel in it, right? For the person who lost the wallet, right, might not make that much of a difference. But the person who finds it, right, it makes a big difference. And it's Yeush. I know that there's Yeush. It's not that I'm stealing from this person. Right? Would that impact on the lifnei mishurat hadin? Right? Maybe. It's a really good question. We have to take a look at that. So here's the last case that we'll look at. And with that, I'll let you go to lunch. Itmar. Hamar ed dinar l'shulchani. Right, it was taught. If you show a coin to a money changer, in other words, you want to know whether it's a forgery, not a forgery, whether there's enough. I mentioned this to someone the other week that you ever wonder where the grooves in coins came from? What? Right. So it's not exactly counterfeit. Right. They were actually invented pretty late by Benjamin Franklin, one of his many inventions. That because people, when coins were made of metal, precious metal, so a good way to cheat the system would be to nick the coin. Right. You take a little piece of. Just a little piece of the silver, a little piece of the gold, you store it. Next coin you get, rub a little piece off, keep it, and before you know it, you're building yourself a little coin collection on your own, right? Or a little precious metal collection, and the coin keeps getting smaller, right? Everybody does it. So at a certain point, people kept doing that, and then the coin would have to go out of circulation, because there just wasn't enough precious metal in it anymore to justify the face value of the coin. So that's something that that the money changer would look into. The grooves, that was the invention, was to stop people from nicking the coin. Because if I nick the coin, so then you see right away that the grooves are no longer there. Right? So that was the, but it took, as I said, Benjamin Franklin, the 1700s. So, for thousands of years, people hadn't thought of that. Any event, so that's what I'm doing. I bring this coin to the shulchan. Even in Tzaran, it turns out it's a bad coin. Tani chada. But what happened was that the money changer, who's an expert, has said that it's a good coin. Right? And I took it, and I bought the coin, and now there's a loss because I try to use the coin, and it turns out that it's a forger. Okay, so does the money changer have any legal responsibility for his mistake? Tani chada uman pater hedyot chayav. Tanya idach ben uman ben hedyot chayav. So we have two brightot saying that it depends on the expertise. The first one, the second one says it doesn't matter. The money changer is always responsible for this. The second one says that perhaps paradoxically that a money changer who's an expert will be held, will not be held responsible, whereas someone who is an amateur will be, basically because he shouldn't have been looking at it in the first place, whereas when it comes to the expert, everyone makes a mistake, right? And you have to prove malpractice. Okay. Amar of Papa, Kitania uman pater, kigon dinako v'isur, delot sriche lemigmar klal. So, Rav Papa said, what's an expert? An expert is these two guys, Danko and Iser. Right? Sounds like a cop show from the 1970s. Anyway, these two guys they were known money experts, and they're considered the experts. Ella b'maito, so if they're such big experts, what did they make a mistake? To b'sichta charita. There's a coin, right? Whatever, there would be a new ruler or whatever, change in politics. So there, as I mentioned, that it has every coin has a certain amount of precious metal in it. But that's not the full face value of the coin, because then there is no point in using the coin in the first place. You could just put it on a scale and know exactly how much metal there is. So there is the face value, which, let's say, I'm just throwing this out, change from place to place and time to time, but let's say it adds 20% to the value. So that was, they didn't realize that this particular coin had gone out of circulation because the regulations were just so new. Okay? Dahi shat nothing me tute sikhta, he it sikhta. They just weren't aware of that. Fine. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. That's the background. Now we have the following case. Ahi itita. So there was a woman who brought her coins to Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia, who was one of the great late Tanaim, early Amoraim, right on that, he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the uncle of Rav, who is going to show up in the story in a moment. He was also a money changer. Amar la, Ma'al Yehu, So he looked at the coin. He said, oh, it's a good coin. You can use it. Turned out, you're wrong, Rav Chiya. It was a forgery. It's a bad coin. So Rav Chiya turned to Rav without blinking and said, Zil chalfani alei. So give her a coin, right? My mistake, I'm taking responsibility for it. Give her a coin instead. V'katuv apinkasi dan isik bish. And write in the ledger that this is a bad debt. Write it off as a business loss. I take the responsibility. Umayishna dinako v'isur de patire. Rabbi Chiya was also an expert, the Gemara says. Tells you something about what the way Talmidei Chachamim were at the time, right? That they were they had professions and apparently a successful profession. Mishum de lo tzricha le migmar. Rabbi Chiya nami lav the migmar kabay. Rabbi Chiya also knew the tricks of the trade inside out. He shouldn't have been responsible. So the Gemara answers: Rabbi Chiya lifni mishur tadin hu da'avad. Rabbi Chiya did this beyond the letter of the law, Kiritati Rav Yosef, and then gives the same limud that we saw in our Gemara on Daf Lamed. So now, I ask you, Jeff, right? Here's the case, right? So it's true. Is the woman a poor woman or not? I don't know. But presumably, does the Gemara seem to make that into a factor? Not really, right? In other words, the factor seems to be, what does it seem to be based on here?
On the profession of...
What?
The profession of...
He made a mistake.
That he made a mistake, right? But I'm taking responsibility for my mistakes. Right? That's the professional integrity, if you will. It seems to be the... I'm not going to hide behind the halacha. Halacha says that that I don't have to repay this. I don't have to pay you damages. I'm going to, have integrity. I'm going to pay. It doesn't seem to matter whether the customer in this case was a poor person or not, right? So another factor, right? This seems to. So here, not exactly related. It's not related to Hilchot Aveda. We just seeing different cases, right? Just to sum it up, all of these different cases are from all different areas, and they seem to be seems to that the concept applies. And as I said before, we have to see, is it the concept or different concepts and how they work it out. One last thing, because I know you guys would never want to get to lunch early, okay, even by 3 minutes. So just flip the sheet for a second, because I just want to finish the whole, this stage of the shiur with just a little more questions, and the Rambam, number 8. The Rambam, this is Hilchot Deot, he brings up Lefnim Mishura Tadin in the following context. I'm only going to read 2 lines, we'll read it much more in depth next time. But I just want to look down 3 lines from the bottom. And this is the Rambam where he talks about the context, the general context of the Shvila Zahav, the general context of the golden mean of balancing yourself, etc. And the Rambam here says the following: Chasidim Harishonim, right, those people who are particularly righteous, Hayu Matin Deot Shelem Miderech HaEmtzait Keneged Shtei Katzavot. They would veer from the mean, right? If you, let's say you have 2 poles. What are the poles? One is stinginess, and the other is being a spendthrift. You can't hold on to any money for a second. Right? One is you never give any money away. The other one gives, you give everybody money, and you're, as a result, you beggar your own family. So now, those are the 2 poles, okay? So the middle one is to be generous. right? To have a sense of money, have a sense of property, but at the same time, not to be stingy, right? To be generous with other people, but not to give away the store either. Okay, that's the middle ground. If you're a chassid, the Rambam says, so then you move yourself a little bit to the one of the poles. So which of those two poles should you move yourself towards?
Giving away
more. In other words, if everyone should be expected to give, let's say, away 10% as part of mitzvah tzedakah, maaser ksafim, you give 15%, 20% of your earnings, right? So that is a chassid. And that, the Rambam says, look at what he says, the underlying line, v'zehu lifnim mishurat hadin. This is what we call by lifnim mishurat hadin. So I'm just going to leave this out there, hanging. The Rambam just did something really incredible in this particular halacha. The Rambam took a legal principle, specifically to cases where I don't have a responsibility to give you something by law, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. And even the term din and beyond din, right? Beyond the letter of the law, and turned it into what? Turned it into a moral issue, right? A chassid. He's talking about generosity, talks about, you know, other character traits. How should I act? What is this doing here? All right. So these and other riddles for next week. Have a great day.